September 17, 1987, Swiss Open files Ty Duran case. Well, you'd think the files were available. Then when you read the article down further, it says the Swiss Justice Ministry said, however, that while a first installment of Swiss bank records was sent to Lawrence Walsh, the documents did not include any material related to Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North or three other key suspects. Documents involving North and Major General Richard Secord and Albert Hakim and Maniker Garbanifar are being held pending court appeals, and Mr. Walsh will not bring indictments in the case until most of the bank records have been reviewed. The bank records are being held up, and the New York Times said it is unclear when Mr. Walsh would be permitted to review the bank documents related to North and the other three figures. And according to the Swiss, Albert Hakim and Mr. Garbanifar, who acted as middlemen, are still blocking the bank records, which means they can be blocked forever, I suppose. So what is the special prosecutor doing? Now, in regards to the nomination of Mr. Bork, Robert Bork, on the Supreme Court, the Wall Street Journal had a quotation of Mr. Bork's. It was an article by Michael Kinsley, October the 1st, 1987, and it refers to Mr. Griffin Bell, the former attorney general under President Carter, speaking up on behalf of Robert Bork. And what he said, speaking to the panel up there in quotes, "If we pick Supreme Court justices by what the people want, we're going to be in bad shape," end quotes. And, of course, Michael Kinsley writes that if you're talking about a nominee who's before these people, his claim was that he will honor the wishes of the majority. But Griffin Bell said, when you want the wishes of the majority, we are in bad shape. Now, speaking of Griffin Bell, Mr. Eugene Hassenfuss filed suit this week against his ex-employers, Richard Secord and Albert Hakim of the Secret Team, and the corporate air services. And of course, Mr. Hassenfuss is attorney on record to get him out of Nicaragua was the same Griffin Bell who doesn't want the justice of the Supreme Court to be at the whims of the majority. Griffin Bell represented Hassenfuss. Now, another article this week pertinent to these tangled webs of Iran-Contra, E.F. Hutton faces an indictment for money laundering. This is San Jose Mercury, October the 10th, 1987. Many of you long listeners to World Watchers know that I have been on the case of E.F. Hutton and Merrill Lynch, that they deposited a lot of heroin and particularly heroin money deposits into E.F. Hutton and to Merrill Lynch from the offices in New York City, millions of dollars in suitcases and cash. And the prosecutors in New York City want to get after E.F. Hutton for the money laundering of the mafia. Now, the attorney for E.F. Hutton, as I've said before, is Mr. Griffin Bell, who I could see would want his handpicked Robert Bork on the Supreme Court, because some of these cases may indeed get to the Supreme Court. Griffin Bell is the attorney for E.F. Hutton, the company accused of the money laundering, which goes into massive billions. And also Griffin Bell is on the board of directors of E.F. Hutton. And for those of you who are not familiar with it, the chairman of E.F. Hutton at the time of money laundering was a man named Scott Pierce, whose wife, Scott Pierce, is the brother of Barbara Bush. This is Vice President George Bush's brother-in-law. Scott Pierce was chairman of E.F. Hutton until just a few months ago, at the time of the money laundering of the mafia. And Griffin Bell is on the board of this company. So you see why these corporations would like to handpick not what the majority wants on the court, but why Griffin Bell, the former attorney general under Jimmy Carter, wants his handpicked attorney on the Supreme Court with these kinds of cases going on. Now, as soon as Ronald Reagan is out of office, if not before, the prosecutors in New York are not going to hold up these investigations of E.F. Hutton, and you might have seen these articles. I just cited one coming into the newspaper quite frequently over the wire service. Now, another large article from the New York Times, September 28th, 1987, and this wasn't reprinted in papers that I got, and this is a whole-page article plus the front page, is titled, "Federal Witness in Pizza Case Recants the Testimony on His Mob Boss, the Mob Boss Salvador Catalona." Now, the whole pizza trial case in New York City that this fellow wants to open up again with lots of luck involved the importation of $16 billion of heroin into the United States from 1984 up to 87, and a suitcase of $1.54 million of cash from Miami up to New York City. And this was the Sicilian faction of the mafia family that ties to Henry Arsan, the P2, Licio Gelli. There's a very cozy relationship between George Bush, the P2, the Vatican, the drugs and arms to Iran, back from Iran, the gun running, and the drug importation into the United States. So as a resume, I've done many, many hours of broadcasts on these characters, but they're new again in the news this week with Hassan Fuss naming Secord Nakim of the Secret Team and the Corporate Air Services and Stanford Technology Training Group, and having that attorney Griffin Bell, and then E.F. Hutton up for indictment with the money laundering, and then the pizza case opening up that ties into the money laundering. It gets closer to George Bush, so close that I believe maybe the system can't afford to have anybody but George Bush. He's so tangled with these operators. Now, just one quick item about Bob Woodward and William Casey that I want to do more later and through the years, of course. An article in the L.A. Times, September the 30th. You remember when Bob Woodward said that William Casey gave a nod at when he spoke about the diversion of money? And the lead article is, Woodward not sure Casey was lucid when queried. This is when he gave his rosebud word, I believe. But on television, Bob Woodward said that he was disguised as a priest. So if you're a priest and you're going to a dying man like William Casey, who's a Knight of Malta, all you have to do is ask, like, some vague question, and thinking it's a priest and you're going on to the next world, which he was doing, I believe would make a very good statement if you're looking at the priest and you believe in God and you certainly don't want to go to hell for what you are doing. Now, at the time of the air crash, Air Florida, in the Potomac River, and incidentally, the main characters in that tie into the Iran-Contra affair, and I'll do more later. Remember the broadcast where I said there was a person disguised as a priest going around to the survivors, and I went into the background of the CIA and disguising of people as priests? Well, when the Detroit, when the airplane crashed in Northwest Airlines, crashed just this past September, there was an article in the San Jose Mercury, September the 14th, priest, in quotes, allegedly worked for a lawyer. And again, with this plane crash, for which there was no real justifiable reason, there were contradictions on why the plane crashed, there was a man who described himself as Father John Irish, who wasn't a priest at all, who was going around administering some kind of comfort to the survivors of some of those 156 people that were killed. And the San Jose Mercury has this article, priest, in quotes, allegedly worked for a lawyer. He wasn't a priest at all. And again, at the time of the Iranian coup d'etat, when Mossadegh was kicked out and Kermit Roosevelt helped throw Mossadegh out and put in the Shah of Iran and the Pahlavi family, the key part of Kermit Roosevelt's activities were persons disguised as priests that brought about the coup d'etat. And Jim Hogan, in the book Spooks, writes about the use of a priest specifically, or other priests, plural, in the CIA and Lockheed scandal involved with Japanese payoffs. So with Bob Woodward coming in as a priest and William Casey, this religious man, saying, I believe, he could believe in God and that would be right, seeing the suit and collar. And it has nothing to do with the Iranian diversion of funds. It just makes a good story. And I believe the rosebud of this story has to do with the garb, the clothing that Woodward was wearing more than anything else. Now, I want to talk about a contradiction, or not a contradiction, but a contrast of the way people are treated, politicians or appointed officials in our government, and ask a question, who makes the rules for the way people are thrown out or kept on the payroll as public officials? I'm thinking specifically of William Sessions. He's the FBI designate who was stricken by bleeding ulcers. He was flying to Washington, D.C. He was hospitalized, And on the airplane, before he arrived in Washington, D.C., he spit out blood. He was actually spitting blood, and this was reported in the newspaper. And according to the L.A. Times, October the 2nd, Sessions had asked for 2 weeks to prepare for his being sworn in the White House. But Ronald Reagan had planned to make a strong defense of Robert Bork, his embattled Supreme Court nominee at the hearing. So he demanded that William Sessions be in Washington in 2 days and not 2 weeks. And having that pressure, he was on Delta Airlines and started vomiting. According to this account, he was vomiting blood. Now, Ronald Reagan visited him in the hospital, which he didn't do with William Casey, and said, "That's okay, Bill, whenever you're well, you can be sworn in as CIA director." Now, Congressman Pat Schroeder gave a tearful farewell when she announced that she wouldn't be a presidential candidate. And the powers that be decide that Pat Schroeder or people like Edmund Muskie, who cried in Maine, are not capable of bringing presidential material. In accounts of Edmund Muskie's crying, many articles didn't mention that the GOP, the Republican Party, gave Edmund Muskie acid that forced his crying, which is all part of our history. It was part of Richard Nixon's dirty tricks, and that his crying was because of something ingested in a food or drink. Nobody says that Pat Schroeder wasn't given the same thing before she gave her speech, or that dirty tricks went outside the window. But ulcers is a symptom of stress, and Pat Schroeder was crying because of stress. But it is socially acceptable to cough up blood on an airplane when you're about to be sworn in, but it is not acceptable to cry on the outside. Our society allows you to bleed in the inside and bleed until you die if it's necessary. But when you show a tear to reduce the stress, and I would say Pat Schroeder is probably healthier than William Sessions, we can't see a salty tear or two, but a man can actually collapse in a coma and cough up blood, and that's all right. And I just ask the question, who determines that it is wrong to cry, but it is okay to cough up blood, that the pressures of these offices don't mean a thing? If you need to cry, you are out, even if you are chemically induced to cry, and who can resist that? And then if you hold it in, little boys are told to be big men, and you know all that crap. If you hold it in, then it's okay, no matter how your body suffers, even if you bleed to death. This is an important point, I believe, for people to consider and ask, who determines what is weakness and what is strength? Now, I read in the newspaper this week, the San Francisco Examiner, that Mordecai Vanhanu did not win the Nobel Prize for exposing the atomic or neutron bomb in Israel, but he won an alternative Nobel Prize. There is an alternative one called the Right Livelihood Award that is given to scientists. It's an alternative prize, and it was given to him by an international jury who was aware of his revealing the Dimona nuclear research plant in Israel in the Negev Desert, where he said Israel had secretly built 1 to 200 atomic warheads, and more important, they had built, the award wasn't for exposing the neutron bomb, but the atomic warheads. Now, several weeks ago when we had a fundraising, I mentioned this woman in Germany who wrote to me and wanted to get tapes of World Watchers and how far World Watchers go. She called me from Germany this week and wanted me to start sending tapes. I hadn't answered her letter yet. And I asked her how things are over there, just a general question, like, how do you feel? And then she burst open with a tale of how bad things are in Germany and how this talk of reducing weapons is just a cover for what is really going on. And she said, all of Europe is talking about the neutron bomb. And I said, would you send me articles and I can get them translated? She said, they are long stories. They cover a whole page. This is everywhere, everywhere in Europe. They are talking about the neutron bomb, which is something that we don't get in this country any more than we get that book, Alessio Gelli. But the deployment of the bomb has to do with France and Germany emerging as co-partners in a defense system and the security of having the neutron bomb at their side as they merge and practice their warfare exercises together. Now, in terms of elections of 1988, there was an article in the San Francisco Examiner, a little quip, Robertson sings those wedding bell blues, but Reagan wrote the song. It's about Pat Robertson's shotgun marriage. It also calls attention that Ronald and Nancy had Patty on the way, that Nancy Reagan was pregnant before they were married, as if it matters at all, except that the stories of Ronald Reagan when he was governor, not only his personal life, which is the least of it, but his financing with Mr. William Wilson, who has inroads in the Swiss banks and in the Vatican and so forth, his buying his property, his not paying taxes. The media was so kind to them, but they go into Pat Robertson's shotgun marriage. And then the paper this past week had an article, Jesse Jackson says his wife was pregnant when married, but the difference is that Jesse Jackson has told people all along, and that Pat Robertson lied and misstated the date of his marriage on his papers, as he did his military record. Now, going to the Bork nomination again, besides the statement of former Attorney General Griffin Bell, heaven help us if the majority selects the Justice of the Supreme Court, there was a very important article in the San Francisco Examiner this weekend titled Bork's Defeat, How His Foes Pulled Together, and this is a lesson for all of us for the next elections to come. The Stop Bork effort, according to this article, and you might have read it, is a carbon copy of the media lobbying campaigns that were often engineered by the conservative groups and the people that got Ronald Reagan in. What they shared, the anti-Bork people, with the earlier efforts, comparing their work to the Reagan apparatus, was a committed core, a hard committed core of ideologues who gave up their individual reasons or arguments and their individual organizations for total dedication to a single goal. Now, in 1980, I was saying and over and on the air, anybody but Reagan. That should be the deciding factor, not John Anderson, not Jesse Jackson, not who the third party is, and the Peace and Freedom Party, and all these splinter groups. It should be anybody but Reagan. And if it was anybody but Reagan, we wouldn't have the ships in the Persian Gulf today getting ready for World War III. Reagan referred to himself in terms of his not having to announce prior to declaring a war, that he said, I am, in quotes, commander-in-chief. And commander-in-chief are the key words that I have warned about Reagan for years. He has identified himself with Franklin Roosevelt, with a third term, with a war. And he said, I don't want the Wars Power Act to interfere with me because, he said, I am commander-in-chief. Now, that's in his head. It's not in the Constitution. But as long as he thinks it, he makes it so because he believes he has that power. But getting back to this article, the way Bork was defeated was by a total dedication to one single goal. It was a smart use of polling data, a clear-cut message, and most important of all, an iron-like discipline. Now, that iron-like discipline is the kind of way that I have to do my research. It's the way other researchers work, or people that get articles out or on radio programs such as David Emery or Nip Tuck. You have to decide your priorities, what you want in this world, and then you have to give up some things, whether it's the sports or whether, you know, the coming ball games or whether it's some of these light frill movies and a lot of time-killing enterprises. You have to have a total dedication to a single goal and an iron-like discipline. And those words they used in defeating the Bork nomination are the only way to get what you want in this world. It's never going to come easy, and it's never going to come in depending that I elected a person. Therefore, I can't, or I can, or he will, or she will, or they won't, or what do we do? And this article said that a number of groups pulled together. There were over 300 groups that pulled together, and no single issue was allowed to be discussed at the expense of the overall plan that Bork should be out. And those are the key words for the next election, not I'll stay home because it doesn't matter, or what can my little interest do, or I belong to this group, or I belong to that group, and our organizations are doing it. A total dedication to a single goal with iron-like discipline is the only way to change this country, and that's what it's going to take, and that's why we got into this mess with the Heritage Foundation and the Georgetown Center for Strategic and International Studies and the Hoover Institute. Those think tanks were allowed to get as much mileage as they did in Young Americans for Freedom because the very people whose necks they were putting that rope around were sitting back, given titles, dumb titles like yuppies or whatever, and maybe they were yuppies or guppies, I don't know. And they sat back and thought, we'll turn into this new age. We'll go into ourselves. If we have stress, we'll massage each other. It's okay to have a massage, but the massage isn't going to take the kinks out of the society. And half the stress of the people I know have stress. And I'm not putting down a massage. You can do your work and have your massage, too. But a lot of the New Age was a diversion away from the hard work of rolling up your sleeves and having a desire for the kind of world you want. And it was this kind of awareness, finally, that broke through. And maybe this is part of the convergence change in our society of merging at this time our energies into a solid group and giving up our egos to change this world. Now, the another article in the Bork nomination that was important, lobbying for Bork, disdained as inept. And this has to do, San Francisco Chronicle story, that people for Bork, such as Senator Charles Grassley and many of the right-wing Republicans, were attacking their lazy president, who they put in and thought was charming. Grassley said, in quotes, "The White House was on vacation during August and asleep at the switch. While Ron and Nancy were riding horses in August, the opposition was organizing. The opposition outplayed us and out-hustled us." Well, Grassley should have seen who he was electing in the first place. All the evidence of who this man is, what a fraud he was, what a conniver to get you into World War III with all his mischief and dirty tricks. Everything you needed to know about Ronald Reagan was known in 8 years when he was governor here from 1968 to 1974. If anybody did hard research, even the Republicans, people like Barry Goldwater, who feel deceived, they only lie to themselves. And when you lie to yourself, you only get back what you covered up, only it smells worse 10 times later. Now, Robert Bork will not take his name out of the court battle. You heard that this weekend. And Senator Gordon Humphrey from New Hampshire said, and this is very important, a vote by the full Senate is needed so historians and voters who are the villains who lynched Judge Bork will be seen. And as time goes on, I think votes against Bork will look less and less admirable. What he means is that as time goes on, these will be televised on C-SPAN and CNN, and in 50 states, wherever those people voted against Bork, a videotape will be made so that they will be up for re-election, or I believe they will get cancer, like Philip Hart of the Senate, Frank Church, Hugo Humphrey, Javits, go on. They could be poisoned like Adlai Stevenson. All the opposition or the other people who could have been spokesmen are dead, and a new generation are coming along. And everyone who's against Bork in the Senate has already been named. The names are in the newspaper, Republicans against Bork, John Chaffee, Bob Packard, Arlen Specter, Robert Stafford, Lowell Weicker. Those are four of them. Democrats against Bork are listed, and they're all listed. And so all they have to do is get their faces on the screen. John Glenn, Albert Gore, Bob Graham, Tom Harkin, Howell Heflin, we know how he's going to go anyway, J. Bennett Johnston, Ed Kennedy, you know his, John Kerry, Frank Lautenberg in New Jersey, Carl Levin of Michigan, Spark Matsunga from Hawaii, John Melcher and so forth, Montana. What they want is the camera to get those faces. And don't think the Get Even team won't get even. It got even in 1975 after the Watergate investigation was over, after the Senator Frank Church committees began investigating what happened. You don't hear anything dead Wright Patman, who got into the banking scandals, and the various congressmen who investigated thoroughly those hearings are gone. The list of people on the committees, it's half obituaries. They're dead. And this is a very dangerous precedent for an administration and a group of people who have merged with the likes of those persons who illegally rearmed Germany after World War One, the Reinhard Gehlen legacy, the family of historians, and with what are death squads, such as Robert Brown was suggested to be part of with Lamar Hunt when he wanted to hire a team, American volunteer group, to kill 10,000 American liberal politicians. That was set up in 1962, the same year that Manchurian Candidate was made. So this is a very dangerous precedent, and Senator Gordon Humphrey says a vote by the full Senate is needed so historians and the voters will see who the villains were who lynched Judge Bork. Bork is no joke. Look at his face. He is absolutely no joke, and this isn't funny. And he is demanding to go before the hearing Senate, so it will be televised and photographed. Ronald Reagan doesn't want it. Those hearings can go on, you know, maybe as long as Reagan's alive through the administration. A justice will be tied up. Bork has been told that, but that isn't the point. Tie them up, but identify them as being anti-Bork, because with Bork on the Supreme Court and having fired the special prosecutor before, he could salvage this president. He sailed along with mass murders, political assassinations, and cover-ups through his entire administration, and it was important to get Bork on. If he isn't on, they want the faces of the people who won't allow him to be on. Well, this concludes the first half of World Watchers. I'm going to take a break for a few minutes and then start with the second half of the program, which is your half. That's when you call in 375-308-2. Have to remember the number here. That's your chance to call in and share what you've been reading or hearing or seeing. In the meantime, before we end, I want to thank Coast Components at 684-1185, the Monterey Bay Area's distributor of electronic components. Thank you for the underwriting grant that brought you the past hour of World Watchers. And the previous hour of World Watchers was also made possible in part by Lowdown.